Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the show, the VF1 show, that is, the show that covers all things business, politics, about Formula One, the money, the things happening behind the scenes that no one necessarily likes to talk about. I'm one of the hosts, Vincenzo, on the other side of the mic, or I don't know. I got to figure that out because you're not really on the other side of the mic. We're in different rooms. Like we're actually in totally different states. So it's like on the other side of the country, Vanessa.
But I'm not even on the other side of the country. I'm like at the midway point. I'm in Austin. I'm in
Yeah,
middle
that's
Earth.
True. All right, like in the southern part of the country, Vanessa. I'll figure that transition out at some point.
In Texas, yeah. I think everyone knows what Texas is. Just say in Texas.
In Austin, deep in the heart of Texas, which only Americans may understand that.
Yeah,
deep in the heart. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
Deep in the heart of brisket country. Joking.
I know. So I'd ask you how you're doing, but I know the answer, which is always going to be good, and you. And then we're going to go right into it. So I'm just going to cut all that out.
Oh, wait,
and we're
going to
go right into it.
Sometimes we talk about the weather.
Sometimes we do. It's getting warm here in Connecticut.
We're really
go
spicy
figure.
People, you guys. We've got a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's getting warm. It's like that time of year and we're recording this podcast. It's Tuesday evening. So by the time you hear this, we're not going to have a race. So this is like a free week for us. Usually we haven't been recording on free weeks most of the time, but we'll get back into it. Coming off of this past weekend, which the Miami Grand Prix, lots of good news, like lots of news to talk about and things to discuss on this show. So I'm going to kind of cut right into it right now. First, immediate thoughts on the Lando Norris win. Lando no wins, finally got his win. And by the way, I've never called him that ever.
Yeah,
that was the first time I've ever said those words out loud. I'm not a Lando Norris like hater by any stretch. Apparently, there's a lot of people that call them Lando no wins. Well, he's no longer that. And he told his haters, he's like, yeah, okay, no one can use that anymore. Initial and immediate reactions, 30 seconds or less, to Lando Norris's victory at the Miami Grand Prix.
I was so excited. It was about time, and who better than Lando? And I feel like the whole paddock, the way everybody was reacting to that, I think shows just how well respected he is. He's friends with everyone. I just, you know, we'll talk about what happened with McLaren in a little bit, but I feel like there are so many people right now who are trying to overshadow Norris's accomplishment with, you know, the political shit. And again, we'll talk about that, but I this is his moment. He's worked his whole life for this and we just need to let him have that moment. And really excited. I have a friend who works at the factory in Woking and he's just like so excited right now. He's like, I'm crying. I'm so happy. But it was definitely well-deserved for McLaren. Your thoughts?
No, I loved it. If there's anybody, you know, else on the grid that I would want to see win, if Ferrari does not, it's, you know, Lando Norris, Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
Those are two guys I like, Fernando Alonso. But it was awesome to see it. And honestly, I will say this, I was impressed by the McLaren pace in general. Oscar's car didn't even have the upgrades.
He had 50% of the upgrades.
50% of it, right. He didn't have the full upgrade package that Lando had. And he had great pace until the incident with Sainz. So that's exciting. That's exciting that there's more cars that are going to be fighting for those top spots. But, you know, Lando and that McLaren, if they are putting this together and they string this together, last year they came up so quickly towards the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were finding a ton of pace in that car. If this development is building off of that and they can cut the development gap, even if they can cut it in half to what it was, you know, they've got themselves a real shot because, I mean, look at Perez. And I have not been a Sergio Perez hater by any stretch, but yeah. I'm starting to really see the difference. Not that I never saw it before, but I'm starting to really see how Max is the ultimate differentiator. And it's like, he's the biggest difference in that car, right? If you took Max out and you put anybody else in that seat next to Checo, Checo probably looks pretty good. But because it's Max, it's like, dude, you suck, right?
Yeah.
But the difference was clear when Max had, which was confirmed later on, pretty bad damage to the floor of the car, which anybody that follows Formula One to any extent knows that the floor of the car is where a lot of your, you know, downforce, a lot of your, you know, grip, a lot of things are created with that from that floor. And he had that damaged floor and he still put time up on Sergio. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. But where I see the difference now with all these, you know, if Ferrari and McLaren can keep developing and keep catching up and getting closer to Red Bull, you've now got yourself, you know, 2-3 teams that are fighting for those spots. The difference between, I think Red Bull, Ferrari and McLaren is that McLaren and Ferrari have two good drivers. I'm not, again, not saying that Checo's a bad driver, but I think that for whatever reason, he just, that car is not necessarily, I don't say suited for him or whatever, but he just doesn't seem to be taking advantage of the fact that he's in this rocket ship, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exciting. Very exciting. Very happy for Lando and very happy for the McLaren team, regardless of all the crap that's out there on the internet about other things that happened, which we'll jump into in a second.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I'm excited. McLaren are bringing a lot more upgrades where that came from who I've talked to. They're ready to continue building. They've got a lot more ready to go. And so I cannot wait to see. I mean, and my friend said that with the right strategy, McLaren has a rocket ship. I was very unprepared, especially during quali when they were unsuccessful in the softs. I didn't know exactly how much power the car had until we saw it in the race. And yes, we can say, well, the differentiator was the safety car. Well, the differentiator in every race, for the most part, where there's, you know, there's a significant change up, is a safety car. You hope for a safety car.
There's always something.
There's always something that happens in a race. And so the fact that Lando happened to get on the winning side of that safety car, I mean, again, it's such a gamble. When you choose to pit is such a gamble. And you can only take the car so far before you say, you know what, we've held on to this. We've got to bring it in. You know, they took the gamble and they won. And so you can't say that, oh, you know, he wouldn't have won without a safety car, because I mean, how many times has a driver won because of safety car? You know what I mean? So that's a really lazy argument to make against why Lando deserved to win this. I mean, they had the better car. They had the advantage. And again, would Piastri have had a better result hadn't been for the incident with Carlos? Who knows? But it was there. It happened. We know that McLaren is building something. We know that there are more upgrades to come. And I think obviously having the data that they have, of course, you know, we've talked about this several times, that the difference between two drivers on a team is significant. You're going to have two drivers with two completely different driving styles. And so you're going to make the adjustments and the upgrades to the car based on how they can maximize that. It's not just one size fits all for the setup. So who knows if Piastri would have had the same result with the same upgrade. So we'll see where they bring Piastri for the next race. But I mean, we can't take away from what Lando accomplished. We can't take away from what McLaren accomplished just because you may or may not like someone or something. And I think that is, again, we've got a lot of haters in Formula One, and that's the laziest, weakest argument you can make against why you're upset about a team. Like, find something else. So
yeah, and the incident we keep referring to is none other than President Donald Trump showing up to the paddock, the McLaren, the McLaren paddock, and they apparently it was requested by the Trump team, and they went through FIA and F1 who approved of it. The Twitter world will have you believing that it was like the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And oh my God, how can they align themselves with him? And, you know, I think there's just a lot of double standard with politics in general. Right. Mm-hmm. And we are at a time in the world, not just the United States, where everything is very partisan. It's you are one side or another. There's no mm-hmm. gray. There's no understanding of another's ideas or beliefs or anything. It's like, instantly you are a racist or you are a misogynist. Like, just because you can't even say anything remotely positive, right, about the conservative side of things online nowadays. And this is generalization too, because I know obviously the same could be said for the flip side.
Yeah.
If you say something about the liberal side, it's instantly you're this, whatever, social, you're a socialist. And so it's a real shame. And it does suck that Lando, it kind of tarnished the fact that he won, the fact that this is his first win ever, and the fact that Trump and Trump puts his own foot in his mouth all the time, like, oh, I'm his good luck charm. Like, it's because I was I was there. And of course, that's like so obvious. Everyone knew that, okay, if Lando somehow wins this race, Trump is going to say it was hit because of him, right? Like, everyone knows that, sure. Because that's he pulls no punches.
That's his MO.
But the fact that people are, and it's fine. But the fact that like people are kind of down on Lando and Zach Brown and, oh my God, they should have told him, no, you're not a sitting president, so you should go. But it's like, is that real? I mean, at least from the, I'm asking you this question. If a former president, which for the record, for anyone listening, whether you're former president or not, you're always referred to as Mr. President, right? You're still President Trump. You're still President Obama. You're still President Clinton. You're still President Bush. Doesn't matter that you're a former president. Like, you're always given those honors, right? Because I saw a lot of people kind of complaining about this too. Like, he's not the president anymore. There's no office of the president. It's like, no, it's always the office of the president. Like, he's always got Secret Service now. He's always got privileges that you and I can never have, right? Like, it's just, sorry. That's just, it doesn't matter if you agree with the person
or
not.
That's how it works. Yeah.
So it kind of sucks that's the road we've gone down. But you and I were talking a little about this last night, and I'll let you talk about this. But this isn't the first time, there's politicians near the track. And I think the biggest issue that folks had was that Trump wanted to have a fundraising event or some sort of like campaign event at the somewhere on the track or related to, or I don't know, I forgot exactly what it was, but it was like they wanted to do some sort of campaign event in conjunction with the race or around the race or whatever it was. And they denied the request because it's like, no, we don't want political statements being, and which is totally respectful, right? Like, respectable. Like, I get that. Like, cool. You can't do a fundraiser. You can't do a campaign event here while we're trying to run a race. Totally understand that. Totally cool with that. But then they let them show up, which in my mind, I say those are two different actions, right? Like, it's not a campaign event. Now, listen, Donald Trump, if nothing else, is a very intelligent or very smart marketer, right? He knows, cool, I can't do a campaign event, no big deal, but I'm going to show up and get all the press I can. And the cheers were loud. I heard from so many people, the cheers for him were very loud. Cheers, not boos. People were cheering him. Like, they loved him. So he knew what he was doing, right? He knew that just showing up and getting there somewhere would give him what he needed. He didn't need anything else. But you brought up some really good points about politicians being around tracks and all around the world. And so,
yeah,
I'll let you just kind of go with that.
Yeah. I mean, and one thing that in particular I can remember is that picture of Lewis and Putin, right? So, I mean, it's politics has always been in motorsport. And I think that is the argument people are making right now. They're saying that politics has no place in motorsport. And it's like, are we watching the same, especially the same Formula One, where you are racing in different countries on different continents? You are literally, every single race you go to, you have dignitaries, you have presidents, you have prime ministers, you have so many global elite politicians and people involved in politics at these races. They're there. And they're getting prime time camera shots. So you can't say politics doesn't belong in Formula One, because we know damn well that it does. And you know what? And I have said this several times, but when you look at Saudi Arabia, when they decided to eliminate compulsory hijab, that was because of that was a financial move. That was an economics driver, right? They wanted to eliminate some of the barriers of entry for people who maybe didn't feel comfortable going to that part of the world, because they just felt like, okay, well, I don't feel safe. There's no place for me there. So they had to do that, especially when they said, listen, we want Formula One here. Okay. They're building a purpose-built track in Jeddah for that exact purpose, right? They want to start competing with Dubai. They want to become the Vegas of the Middle East, if you will, minus the true Vegas nature. And so if you want that as an economic boost, then you're going to have to play ball maybe with traditions and things that you might not find the most savory, right? That is politics happening right there, right in front of us. They know exactly what they're doing. So this idea that don't bring politics into motorsport, you know, okay, fine. To some extent, I agree with that, because I think that, yeah, if you want to have a fundraising event at a race, that's where you draw the line. You cannot have that. If you want to have your own fundraising event in conjunction with Formula One during that week, great, have that. That's fine, because other businesses are doing it. Other politicians, no doubt, they're working different rooms. You had Carbone on the beach. You had a bunch of different parties happening that, you know, politicians were there. You know that they were lobbying. You know they were working the fundraising routes, because that's what they do. Lobbying, politicking, all that. You find any room, any possible gathering of influential people, and that is where you go. And that is where you hope people bring checkbooks to do backroom deals, right? That's how it works. Whether people like it or not, that's, you know, and I think where you draw the line is using politics, maybe to have your play with words. I know that when Lando crossed the finish line in Miami, Crofty said something like Trump.
He said Norris Trump's Verstappen.
Yeah. And wins the Miami Grand Prix. And you know that, unfortunately, that is now going to stick with Lando Norris. That is his maiden victory. That is what people are going to remember, is this unsavory play of words from Crofty. And that's unfortunate, because in a way it kind of ruins his moment, right? And it attaches him more to Trump. And I think if you have a conversation with Lando Norris, he's probably going to say, I don't give a shit about American politics. Let's call it what it is.
Right.
But that is, unfortunately, someone's play of words is now associated with because that's the clip that people are going to play 100 years down the line. That's what people are going to hear. So, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, Brits, I mean, I think maybe in the U.S. we don't use the word not as much.
We use it a lot. I've noticed it.
I think Brits use it more, but
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe people are hypersensitive to it now because of,
I think, you know,
Donald Trump and becoming president. Yeah. But like Trump, the word Trump means nothing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, he was brought in on trumped up charges. That's been like a phrase that you would see on, you know, everywhere all the time. You know, when someone is brought up on charges that are kind of charges that are increased unsavory for no reason, right? Or right? Or you know, to trump someone is to outrank them or to defeat them.
Yeah. Yeah, but to your point,
again,
I think
it's not, it's like a normal word.
Yeah, people are more hypersensitive to that word. But again, because the, you know, because Trump happened to be there, that is the unfortunate association that people are going to remember. You know, it's unfortunate. I hope people don't, you know, instinctively associate the two, which they will, because now I think people are going to be more hyper aware of it. But, you know, what people need to understand is that, you know, Trump, from what I'm reading right now, they wanted to have, his team wanted to have a paddock suite or fundraising event at a paddock suite with tickets going for $250,000. And Miami GP organizers issued a cease and desist. And then he went around and contacted McLaren directly. F1, he did not reach out to F1. F1 did not reach out to him. He contacted McLaren directly and they took him up on it. They said, you know, okay, that's okay. We'll show you the paddock. We'll, you know, but when you actually looked at the sideline, you also saw that, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was there. You saw there were other politicians who were there, and we're not talking about them. It's just Trump. So again, it's that personal bias. And I think what so much of this is people around the world, they have their opinions of Donald Trump. And I get it. He's done some shady deals all over the world. His kids were involved in some deals that people still talk about. And you know, but that's the nature. When you are a globally recognized business person, when you are a politician, when you are bringing your children into the political fold, that is what happens, right? But I think on a bigger scale, we have to remember every single time there's a race, there are politicians at that race. And we're not giving them the airtime that we're giving Trump. And there's such a massive bias against Trump from whatever angle it may or may not be. And we're extremely hypersensitive to that. And it's, I think people need to know also when to kind of get out of their own heads, right? When to say, you know what, it's not that important. It's not that serious. And I'm not going to allow a politician to, you know, have my sport overtaken with their opportunistic behavior, right? I am not going to allow this politician inside my world. But unfortunately, people tend to talk about things that are trending. So what you're seeing on social media is a lot of content creation based off what's trending, because that's what always happens, because that's, you know, that's what they know is going to perform the best. And unfortunately, this is performing really, really well right now. And I mean, look at us, we're having a whole podcast about it. So people know what they're doing, and they know it's going to get people going in the comments, and that's going to boost engagement. And they're going to say, you know what, that's fine. I'm going to take a hit. But my engagement's going to be through the roof, and this is going to be fantastic. And everyone's going to be arguing over politics, and no one's going to fully understand what it is that they're talking about. Right. Because like you said, it is left side or right side. No one can ever see in the middle anymore. No one can have productive conversations about anything anymore. And you can look no further than any possible F1 social media account right now for examples of that. And it's kind of sad that that's where we're at, but I think it highlights significantly just how much we are divided, not just as a country, but as a world, that the fact that our favorite sport continues to divide us, when really what we should all be doing right now is coalescing around Lando and saying, hell yeah, it was about time. We're so excited for you. Instead, we're just litigating this political shit over and over again. And, you know, I think it does cheapen the sport in a lot of ways. But again, people can't be so delusional and say, keep politics out of Formula One, because what do you think the sport was built on? So any other argument against that is, again, it's delusional.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a sport that travels the globe.
Yeah,
that races in municipalities, that races, you know, in places where there's a lot of, in the normal world, there's unsavory things that happen. And I'm not going to say we are not talking about those things, because we are, and people do complain about Saudi Arabia and sport washing and all this other stuff. So it's not that it doesn't happen, but there's always dignitaries at these events. There's always folks that are showing up, that are leveraging this platform to do something or say something or make a statement. So it's nothing new. I mean, like just to tell you how ridiculous it was this weekend, I had posted a video of, or a photo of, actually it was a video of Trump being at the McLaren garage. And I just said something like, you know, Donald Trump is in the garage, whatever. I'm actually looking for, I'm scrolling back through my tweets to find it. It was just, I don't know. It was just it was just the video of Trump in there kind of talking to Zach Brown. And I actually had people like telling me to delete this, which again, it's Twitter. It's just a bunch of trolls most of the time. But people were like, delete this. And then one person was like, literally unfollowed me. Like showed me or like told me, he's like, I instant unfollow someone that's and again, I really couldn't care less, but someone that has followed and we've interacted back and forth for a long time. I always see them in my mentions and stuff, and never anything like negative. And I mean, I simply just said hanging in the McLaren paddock earlier today with Donald Trump, and that was it. Like nothing of any political statement, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, this is what bothers me, as if I'm the one who put him there.
Right.
Just the fact that I was mentioning
the whole thing.
Yeah. It was like, I'm going to delete, you know, cool. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, great. If that bothered you that much, like, unfollow. I mean, if you think that, like, if that's that big a deal for you to unfollow, then unfollow. So, of course, later on, I kind of doubled down and I said the winner's call from Crofty was Norris Trump's Verstappen with like Trump, you know, pumping his fist type thing in from that paddock. And then I actually put a video of the call itself and, you know, people are like just losing their mind. And I'm like, this is literally what actually happened. It wasn't as if I, you know, made something up or created something that didn't happen. And it's almost as if people would prefer to just, like, hide from reality than just like accept it and say, okay, this is what happened. Now, whether you like it or not, that's, you know, it is what it is, right? We all have different opinions and different, like, as long as you're respectful. But people, this is what bothers me, is that people lose the respect aspect. Like, there is zero respect. It's like, oh my God, you mentioned Trump's name. You must be a racist. You must be, women hating.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And it's like, okay, well, cool. I mean, great. Like, how am I supposed to respond to you and continue to have a conversation with you? And so this is what it kind of, you know, went down. And like you said, politics is not separate from these sports. We, like, as I was saying, we race in municipalities. You need governments to help support your initiative being the Grand Prix, to get these events off, like, and have them happen. It's the same reason, politics is the same reason you're not seeing races like Kailami in South Africa or a race in Germany again, because the governments either don't want to spend the money or they're too corrupt and they're not willing to spend in that infrastructure that's needed. And so we can sit here and complain about politics, and we can sit here and complain and say, oh, keep politics out of motorsport, which is fine. I understand that. Like, I do get it. Believe me. I want to understand where people are coming from genuinely. But to say that it's not what it's about is actually kind of false, because it really at some level is. And the beauty of, you know, I love when some of my tweets and stuff go viral to the point where people start seeing them that are not even interested in motorsport. So they'll make a comment and then other people will actually come to my defense and be like, yo, dude, this guy talks about business of F1. So if it, like, there'll be people like, yeah, so what? What does that have to do with anything? And it's like, this is literally what I tweet about all the time. This is the kind of stuff I talk about.
Literally everything.
it's quite literally. It's anyway. It's just kind of funny when people don't
you know what?
Want to understand that there's so much more involved in the events that you watch. You know, it's the same thing that goes on with the money conversation. And we could talk a little bit about the money, the money at the Miami Grand Prix as well. And like some of the stuff that people were talking about there. But if you don't think that there's some dark shit happening behind the scenes or some stuff that you probably don't agree with behind the scenes, like then your head is buried deep in the sand like an ostrich with your ass up in the air and you're pretending like nothing is happening around you and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's talk about the money at the Miami Grand Prix for a second.
I'm just going to say that I think this goes back to...
You finish off the statement. Sorry.
Yeah, I think this goes back to the Drive to Survive influx of fans. And so many of them, they don't understand the bigger picture of F1. They understand like modern F1. But, you know, back to my example of Lewis Hamilton and Vladimir Putin. 2015, I mean, let's not forget what happened in 2015. I mean, this is a guy who was shaking his hand. And then he said, I'm very proud to be here in Russia. We've had a great time. Thank you so much, everyone. After winning that race in 2015 was when Syria.
And what else is he going to say?
Well, right. But like that's when Syria or Russia launched a military intervention in Syria. And of course, that was, you know, at the request of Assad. But, you know, we won't talk about that. But it was, I think that if you had the post DTS fan base involved in F1 back then, you kind of wonder what they would have said, or if they were, you know, even in any way, shape or form interested in Formula One back then, what they would have said in response to Trump being in Miami. And it just kind of shows, I think, the ignorance of political involvement in the sport. And it's, yeah, to your point, what else would he have said? Nothing. You know, maybe he would, I don't know. Maybe F1 wouldn't even be racing then if it was under the same standards that it is now. Who knows? But these are all factors that, you know, the sport changes so much and the fan base changes so much and the narratives change so much. But to say again that there's no politics, there's no room for politics in motorsport. I mean, you guys, we have to kill that. We got to kill it because it historically, when you look back, I mean, this is just going back to 2015 in that example. You go back in the history of Formula One, you will see that they are one and the same with each other. So we need to kill that narrative. Moving on. Let's talk about the money.
Yeah. I mean the money. So there was a post and I actually refrained from commenting on this for like all weekend long. There was a post going around. It was more than one post. There was so many people that were not like non-Formula One or motorsport fans. They were a lot of these like think boys on you know Twitter and other social media places that were passing around the price list from the Hard Rock Beach Club at Miami, which is a VIP area. Prices were $1,700, almost $1,800. American dollars for a 3-day pool deck access. And then it increased up to like 65 grand for a 10-person cabana for the weekend, 3 days, and a $30,000 minimum F&B. F&B meaning food and beverage for those that aren't familiar with hospitality terms. And so the prices were like Maine lobster rolls, $280. Fruit platter, the F1 platter, sorry, $290. Fruit refresher, $190. Add an ounce of caviar to any item for $400. So people, this ended up getting passed around. And I mean, there was like major podcasts commenting on it. And there was, you know, everybody and anybody was commenting on this like one image of, you know, Bites. That was the menu, the title. And so I finally commented, was it this morning? This morning at 7 a.m. I actually posted this. And I was like, you know, this photo needs context. And I'm like, this is a VIP area. These prices, these are meant to serve, and actually they're meant to serve more than four people. I said four, but if a cabana fits 10, then these are likely supposed to fill, you know, enough food for 10 folks. I don't think it was enough for 10 folks, maybe not 10 Americans, maybe 10 Europeans. but let's just split the difference and say it was enough food for seven people. $280 now, yes, is still a $40 lobster roll. But I will tell you this, I live in the heart of lobster roll country in Connecticut. We have amazing lobster rolls on the shoreline here. And any good lobster roll shack will still charge you about $25 for a lobster roll. And I'm talking about a shack. They catch their own lobsters like in the morning. They come back to their little hut and they serve lobsters out of it and lobster rolls out of literally like a wooden beach shack. And so you're still looking at about $25 for a lobster roll. So again, let's just say it serves seven people. You're getting main lobster rolls for $280. Let's say you get seven of them, right? So $40 a pop. That's probably, that's like, to me at least, the, and again, I'm not saying it's not opulent to the most extreme extent, but it makes sense. I mean, I grew up going to Yankees games, old Yankee Stadium and then new Yankee Stadium. And it was like beers were $15, $20 for a Bud Light or whatever light. I mean, like, again, I get it. And I don't, I'm not going to sit here and diss or like make fun of Europeans or anything like that. But maybe it truly is that meme, like the European mind cannot comprehend this, right? Like it just makes no sense to them. I remember, totally anecdotal here, but I remember going out in Italy with my cousins. This was like years ago. And my brother and I were, we went to a, it wasn't a nightclub, but it was like a salsa night bar, whatever it was. And we were like, oh, a bottle was only $100 for a bottle. It was like a, we ordered a bottle of vodka because there was like 12 of us cousins. We're like, oh my God, it's $100 for a bottle. Let's get the bottle. And they were like, oh no, they're like $100 for a bottle. No, the drinks are only like $4. And we were like, oh yeah, but we could make drinks for all of us and we could have multiple and this and that. And they were like, well, whatever. And we were like, no, we got it. We'll pay for it. You know, me and my brother were like, we're thinking about this. And I'll tell you right now, like they came out, they brought the bottles with sparklers, very like American style, right? The same way you would see it in any nightclub or day club here in the US. And they put it on our table and my cousins were mortified, right? All of my cousins from Italy, like they were mortified. They're like, oh my God, what are you guys doing? Right? Now here in the US, you do that and you're like, oh, you know, you feel like hot shit. You're like, oh, we got the nice table. We got scantily clad servers bringing us bottles with sparklers and shit on it and whatever. And we just overpaid a crap ton for a bottle of vodka. I think it's just not understood, right? What, now this is Miami. Miami is known for that. Vegas, known for that. Like that level of party life, partying. Like you can't get into a decent club in Vegas or Miami unless you buy a table.
Yeah.
My bachelor party was at the Marquee in the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas. And, you know, the guys that took me there, my brother kind of led the way. I mean, the table was minimum was like $5,000. That was minimum. And to get another bottle was like, I don't know, I think it was $1,500 for a bottle. Now again, 15, this is like, think about this for a second. A liter bottle of Belvedere vodka or whatever. Yeah, it was Belvedere, I believe, was $1,500. You could pick that up at any liquor store for like $60, $50, yeah, right? You're paying for the table service. And that's what I think like people just not understanding is that, yes, F1 is definitely going to be more expensive than your NASCAR race in Martinsville, right? Everyone's talking about the Martinsville hot dogs. They're like $3, whatever. Great. But the F1 race, especially in Miami, especially in Vegas, they never were going to be that. They were never going to be that, number one. But number two, and this is like the final point I'll make, and I'll kick it over to you. This wasn't even the main concession area. The main concessions were reasonable. The main concessions were like $15. You know, yes, it's still pricier than going to a restaurant in your town, but it was still normal pricing. It was normal prices for food that you would get at any sporting event. $15 for this, $8. Some people were responding to my post and they were like, oh, you know, I saw concessions for as low as $8. And it's like, So there you go. And a lot of it was like local restaurants that they had serving. There was like food trucks mm-hmm. and stuff like that too, that were serving food. So it's just, it's so comical for people to be like, it's like money and politics. People want to pretend that you could just remove them and the sport would be flourishing. And it's like, on the contrary, it's what's actually helping power the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in that vein, Las Vegas, it's a different world. I mean, I've been to EDC Las Vegas, and I can tell you that the bottle service, although this is an older menu, you still had, for example, street taco platter, $70, of fruit platter, $85. I mean, there's still a lot of money. You're still spending $40,000 on a 6 liter of Dom Perignon Brut. I mean, it's still expensive no matter where you go, because you're paying for premium product, right? You're not paying to go sit in the sun all day. You are paying for a premium product. And therefore, the prices in that zone are going to be priced according to the people who can afford to actually be there, right? It's just different experiences for different price points. So we can't sit here and you know, fight each other on the internet over a menu that most people will never have access to. That's like saying that again, it's the same thing as saying privilege should not exist, that these activations, these different zones should not exist, that it should be one size fits all. Well, that would be fantastic in theory, but in reality, you have so many different types of people going to these events. They want so many different types of experiences, and you create the experience around the demand. If enough people say, we want a sky deck, and in that sky deck, we want pools, we want bottle service, we want it to be like Las Vegas, then that's what you give them, knowing that they're going to pay a premium for it. And if they're not going to pay a premium for it, then you're going to have sponsors, you're going to have different agencies coming in there, bringing in influencers and people like that, because they're going to have partnerships going on and they're going to make money off of the influencers being there, posting to their millions of followers about the Las Vegas Grand Prix. That's exposure to the sport. They're likely being styled by people, and that's going to be exposure to those brands, because the brands are going to be tagged. I mean, look at the exposure that Charlotte Tilbury got this week. It was you were seeing Charlotte Tilbury everywhere. Charlotte Tilbury is a global makeup brand. I love Charlotte Tilbury products. They're they're everywhere. Everybody, all of the major key players on the female side of the sport were going to the Charlotte Tilbury activation for touch-ups, for this and that. And that is not cheap makeup. We're not talking e.l.f. We're not talking drugstore. We're talking, you know, 40, you know, some odd dollars for a lip gloss. That's a premium product. So
I don't know if you saw, did you see that she had, that Charlotte Tilbury has a waiting list for like some new product that she's putting, that she just released. And I say she, that the line released. Yeah. And it was
darling,
emotion boosting perfumes. 25,000 person wait list before they went on sale. Yep. Like, holy crap, that's crazy demand. And like, it's again, like you said, it's not cheap stuff.
Yeah, it's not.
You know? Yeah. I mean,
like literally in my makeup right now, there's probably, I want to say roughly around $400, $500-ish worth of just Charlotte Tilbury. And I'm not proud of that. I'm a makeup hoe. I love makeup. We all have our things, but it's a lot of money to spend on a product. And now everybody has exposure to that product. It's not everyone's thing, and that's okay. But again, you can't sit there and criticize Charlotte Tilbury for wanting a piece of this, because she understands the branding. She understands the value that participating in motorsport brings to her brand. She gets it. I mean, she was even handing out trophies for the Academy trophy presentation. So she knows what she's doing. So people have to understand that Formula One is not NASCAR. It is not IndyCar. It is none of those. It is a Formula One. You are paying premium prices for sometimes a not so premium product, but being there is the product. Physically being at these races and participating in this experience, that's the product that you're paying into. And if you don't like it, then you can go find another sport, right? But as long as you're going to be watching F1, going to races, you're always going to look at these different activations and you're going to covet those activations. You're going to want to be there. You're going to see the TikToks and the videos, and we see the comments people leave. Oh, that looks so much fun. I would love to be there, out of my price point, out of my tax bracket in some cases. But it's you always want to experience that. And so if you can't experience that, what are you going to do? You're going to sit on the internet and you're going to talk shit about it, because that's just the human condition, right? So I think we need to move away from that and just say, listen, you're always, even Costco has different tier memberships, right? There's always going to be different tier products for different, you know, different price points. And that's okay. We're all there watching the same race. We're all there at the end of the day, seeing the same drivers. You might have greater access to the drivers than somebody sitting in general admission, but that's okay. You know,
you said two things.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go on.
I was going to say, you said two things I thought were really interesting. You said a lot of things that were interesting. Two things stood out to me the most were demand, and then what you just said, where like we can all be there for different things. And I think that's the biggest point of contention with a lot of folks, traditionalists. The folks that, you know, the people that have been watching the sport for so long, they can't fathom that someone would want to turn up at a race event to watch the sport they love, or maybe not to watch, just to be seen, or just to be at the event, just to be around it. And to some extent, I don't blame people, right? Like,
yeah.
I didn't have the privilege of going to tons of Formula One races growing up. I mean, we lived in the US, so it's like we didn't have access to all these races. And there's people that don't have the money to go, or whatever. They can't get the time off, whatever it is, right? We all have different reasons that we can't go to an event or whatnot. So I think there's definitely a lot of people are green with envy when it comes to, oh my God, those people are there and they don't even like the sport. Okay, so there's that. But then to your point, to your other point about demand, well, they're selling these things out. And we didn't even go down the road of like the yachts. I had a friend of mine hit me up, who I haven't talked to in forever, who was like, hey, thought of you when this happened. A buddy of mine got hit up to have his yacht used to take the Ferrari, like an F1 car, through the harbor, like just to go around through the harbor on a yacht.
Nice.
Right. And I think, I don't know what the whole like reason for it was. He just kind of sent me the thing. And I was like, I got inundated with so many like messages of that kind, like, oh, check this out. It was just kind of a busy weekend. So like, I didn't get a chance to really focus on it, but I'm thinking to myself, my God, that's so American. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so, you know, you're throwing, now it's also Monaco. We saw people throwing, you know, Ferrari F40s in the back of yachts, and there's all that kind of stuff. But like, it's just fascinating to me that some people refuse to understand the law of supply and demand. It's simple economics. If people want it and there's enough demand for it, you make the supply and that's it. Finding that balance is where you make money, right? You have too much supply, demand eventually is going to fall. If there's, you know, too much demand, not enough supply, again, it's not you. So you have to strike a balance between supply and demand. And that's all Miami's doing. Like, if people are clearly paying $65,000 plus a $30,000 F&B minimum, then it is what it is. I'll tell you this, like, you think that's a lot of money. I remember when my wife and I got married, we got married in Las Vegas and we were at the Cosmopolitan. We had, you know, our closest friends and family come out, and we decided we were going to get a cabana by the pool one day. And the minimum was like, I don't know. We had to spend, I can't remember if it was $3,500 or $4,500 for the cabana. Now, we had the cabana all day and we basically ate and drank all day long. And at the end of the day, we still didn't hit the minimum. So we ended up just getting a bottle of Dom Perignon to kind of do a toast for everybody, right? To hit the minimum number. So when people like look at these numbers, they're just kind of like, oh my God, well, those are outrageous. And I'm like, yeah, it's outrageous, but you're paying. Now, this was a regular Saturday. It was actually Labor Day, a Labor Day weekend in the United States. Labor Day is end of summer, kind of a big deal, whatever. But that was like a normal day. So imagine having a 3-day weekend, again, $65,000, whatever it is, for a 3-day weekend on the track, you know, near the track with all the amenities at this event, this major event. If you've got 10 people going to a cabana, $65,000 probably actually isn't even that much money. And I know that's kind of foolish of me to start saying that. $65,000, let's call it $100,000, right? Because food and beverage. For 10 people, it's $10,000.
Yeah.
That's $10,000 for the weekend. Okay. Now,
and this is a business thing. I have to interrupt. You wonder how many people are at these events on business. They're writing this stuff off.
Yeah,
100%. They're inviting clients. 100%. They're schmoozing. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get big deals done. Imagine how many people in real estate are there, or, you know, Bitcoin even.
100%.
This is a write-off for them. So they don't give a shit with it. And yes, it is. It's a different tax bracket. That's okay. We don't have to be haters. Totally.
But when you really break that down, and this is really difficult, right, to go and try and explain this to people online, but $10,000, you got 10 people. It's $10,000 a pop.
Yeah.
To get this incredible cabana for the weekend. I mean, again, some people value that. And like you just said, a lot of people would say, well, that is a business expense I'm willing to have to be seen at this place, mm-hmm. to get to
networking
whoever else is in that area, right? Yeah. And network in that area.
Yeah.
It's the reality of it. And $10,000 would also, by the way, that would include the food. So I'm saying it would cost $100,000. So that's the $65,000 cabana. And I'm assuming the $30,000 F&B was in addition to the $65,000.
Probably.
That's for the weekend. So now you have that's 3 days in that area. And your food and, you know, now your food and drink is covered in that for $10,000. Now, listen, I'm not saying by any stretch the food is worth that much money or whatever it is. But there's some experiences that cost $25,000, $35,000. There's $5,000 experiences, right? For a 1-day thing or for a paddock axe, whatever it might be. So it's really about what you value. There's some people that will, the same people that are complaining would spend money on the paddock club access just to go be able to, you know, meet their favorite driver or walk through their favorite team's garage, right? Like they would spend money on that. So it's really based on what you value. Other people are saying, like we just talked about, like you just said, it's a networking opportunity. I'm going to spend the money to network with people, mm-hmm. that are going to get me more business or that I want to sell myself to.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of what these events are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and then the argument that I've been seeing also is tax the rich, because of course everything has to be left or right, right? We can't have a single moment in history without people having some kind of comment on rich versus poor, right? So you've got that comment as well. But I mean, again, this shouldn't bother people. Okay. It really shouldn't bother people. Just like the influencers who are at these races, who, yes, people are paying for them to go to these races because they see this as an opportunity to get their brand, get the sport, get whatever they're trying to sell. It's a sales role. Influencers are salespeople and they get paid. A lot of influencers get paid really, really well to sell people products. So I think if you rebranded influencer to saleswoman or salesman, then maybe people might look at the role a little bit differently, but that is how they work. That's how they make their money. And some are better than others at it. But if you are so good as a salesperson that you are invited to these races and you get these premium packages and people fly you in first class and you're staying at the premium hotels, then you've done well for yourself. And if anything, you should say, I would love to be in that room so I could so that I could network with this person so I could pick their brain and understand how they did it so that I could get invited to these races as well. Maybe I should start following this person on social media and I don't know, maybe ask some questions and see if they answer, shoot my shot. That is how people should, I think, reprogram their brains to think when it comes to these types of things that they're being exposed to on social media. Otherwise, again, find another hobby. Maybe this isn't for you. If you're so triggered by the dollars, by the cents, by the politics, by all the things we've talked about today, then find a different hobby, because welcome to the world of F1. Nothing has changed. It's been like this since the beginning of time.
Yeah. Listen, I'm with you. And kind of, I guess we'll just segue right into our final thoughts here about, or just what the numbers were for Miami. You know, the numbers came out a little bit earlier today. The Miami Grand Prix is now the highest viewed live F1 race in history for in the US. These are US numbers only. 3.1 million average viewers for the race. They had nearly a million for the sprint race on Saturday. And again, this is only numbers on TV. This doesn't include F1 TV. A lot of people kill me for that. They are like, oh, well, those don't include F1 TV numbers and yada yada, whatever. Okay, so these are not F1 TV numbers. These are strictly Miami Grand Prix on ABC, 3.1 million. So now, here's a couple things to think about. The F1 race was Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. The reason why we always report things in Eastern time is because there's the largest amount of population is on the Eastern Seaboard. I hope I'm correct about that. I think I'm pretty sure I am. Or at least it's on East Coast time. That, let's put it that way, not the Eastern Seaboard. And so that's typically kind of a reference point, okay, Eastern time. So it was 4 o'clock. It was right after the NBA Game 7. So that was a lead-in, a direct lead-in. Game 7 from the NBA led right into Formula 1. So that's a positive, right? Leveraging something else. And then NASCAR had a rain delay. So there was like a perfect storm for this historic viewership that we got. But also, I think it's really positive because the numbers we were seeing all season long up to this point were so bad, right? And I say so bad, but so bad compared to the past year or two. And this kind of changes that narrative quite a bit. You have something that's shown in a normal time slot, right? It's not really in a bad time slot for other parts of the world. Sorry, Australia, like I get it. You guys kind of always get the shaft. But this is what the viewership looks like. And this is where, you know, this is what Liberty's been kind of ramping up for. The previous record was 2022 Miami race, which was their inaugural race with 2.6 million. So again, a lot of growth there for Miami, a lot of positive signals for what viewership, you know, what we can expect for viewership going forward with, again, normal races. Now we're getting into the European season. You know, we're getting to a point where we've got Imola, we've got Monaco coming up. Those races are going to be held at traditional times, F1 times, which should be a lot better for viewership here in the US. You know, it doesn't hurt that McLaren showed up. Looks like they can bring the fight to Red Bull. Ferrari, we know, is bringing upgrades next week. And Imola as well. That could make a big difference. So there's a lot of things setting up. We're only, this is race 7? No, this is race 6. So race 7 next week, or next race is in Imola is race 7. So it's still very early in the season. There's 24 races this season. Like, this is one of the seasons where we're a quarter of the way through, or a third of the way through, roughly. And it seems like so much has happened. And we've got so much more to go. Like, there's 18 more races. Yeah. And there's already so much stuff that's happened. It's been announced. And there's so many things to look forward to for next season. And the fact that I'm going to look at current standings. But we're not, you know, Max has 136 points. You've got Perez who jumped Leclerc now. I think he's at 103. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a tighter spread. Leclerc's only 38 points behind Verstappen. Mm-hmm. Norris is, and Sainz are tied, which is good to see. Sergio's only, 33 points or so behind. Like, that's a good spot to be in right now. Yes. And to consider that Max won 4 races and he's is not like breakaway leading right now is really good, right? This could be very positive. Hopefully it wasn't just because he, you know, hit a bollard and accidentally got picked up by a safety car and something happens, but Like, this could be good. I mean, what do you think about the numbers? Like, what does that signal to you? Like, what do you think about when you see those types of numbers?
Honestly, I'm looking more at the constructors right now. Red Bull's at 239 points, Ferrari at 187, McLaren at 127, and Mercedes is down at 64. That's not, obviously, it's shit for Mercedes. At the very least, getting second in the constructors was, you know, I think the high point for Mercedes, and now it doesn't look like that's going to happen. They're just not bringing the car that they anticipated having. But this is going on for several years now. And I think if anything, it just, and I hate to say this, but for years, people have said that Toto Wolff without a spending cap is not the person that people think he is. And I'm like, is that actually true now? You know, you can build whatever you want if you have an unlimited budget, sure. But, you know, so is he the genius? Is he the mastermind that we thought he was? It's not looking like it at this point. And so obviously it's not looking good for Mercedes. I think Ferrari and McLaren are going to be in a tough fight the rest of the season. I still think it's Red Bulls to run away with. I think at some point they're just going to hit their stride. Even with the Adrian Newey stuff happening, although perhaps at some point they say to Adrian Newey, we're going to let you go if he does decide to move to another team. But there's also been rumor that he had a yacht commission last year and that his intent is to sail away on his yacht. And so that might happen also. But just, you know, in for all intents and purposes, him not seeing the development on the next car if he is going to a competitor. So there's a possibility that that could happen. Of course, then we'll see what his actual power was, I think, or you know, how many other people in that Red Bull garage were actually impacting a lot of these decisions too. Who knows? But I think when it comes to Ferrari and McLaren, that is the title, or not title, but that's more to watch this season, especially Ferrari. I mean, they're obviously trying. They're trying to compete with Red Bull. They don't see McLaren, Mercedes, Aston Martin. They don't see any of the other teams right now as their competition. And that's a good place to be in right now if you're Ferrari, knowing that you're getting Lewis Hamilton. And I think if you're Lewis Hamilton, you have to look at this year and say this year's already a wash. I'm not getting anywhere near P2 this year based on where we're at right now. But I have something to look forward to next season with Ferrari. So, you know, I think of any of the drivers on the grid right now, Lewis is in the best position because he knows that he's going to the second best team on the grid right now next season. And those are, I think more than anything, those are the things, the narratives to watch out for, especially on the drivers and constructor side right now.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it right there. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of things to be excited for this year, but there's also a lot to be looking forward to for next season. So it does keep you interested. Again, if we continued down the path that we were for the first, you know, five races of the season, where, you know, you've obviously got the runaway Verstappen, there's no one, you know, putting a close enough fight with him, you know, aside from Sainz, that one race because Max went out, then I think you're looking at, like, it's a wash and it's a long season. You're looking at 24 races the entirety of the year. I mean, we're going all the way to December. Like, we have to work, like, this is something we're going to be watching the same season all the way through to December, right? Like, that's, when you wrap your mind around that, it's like, holy crap, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's
exhausting.
But I think they're like, it's very exhausting. Yeah. And it is very, like, it does wake you up to the fact that, like, we're just commenting on stuff and watching it from afar. We're not even the people that are on the ground doing the work, you know, traveling all over the globe doing this. So, like, shout out to all those folks, you know, men and women and people that are you know, out there grinding and doing this. I mean, it is a grind, right? The Formula One circus is a grind. So yeah, I think we could be, if this race was a sign of things to come, we could be in for a solid season. Even if Red Bull runs away with it, you've got a tight race for number two, you know, that 2-3, Which is good as long as there's somebody else, right? There's like, there's something to look forward to that's at least somewhere near the top, right? It's not like, oh, we're, you know, it's a really exciting race at the for the fifth and sixth team or something. Like, no, this is the battle for second's pretty good too. And they're giving Red Bull a fight at least, you know, every couple races like that. Then you're still keeping people interested. So,
but I think the exciting thing about it, though, is that it's not Mercedes, right? At least not right now. You've got McLaren and Ferrari battling out for a second. So,
which I argue is more exciting than, yeah, no offense to Mercedes. Right, I am a Toto Wolff fan. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan.
Right.
If you don't have Ferrari winning or at least keeping things exciting, it's very challenging. Mm-hmm. You need Ferrari to be in it. McLaren has a lot of history. You need McLaren to be doing well to an extent. The same could be said for Williams if that ever happens again. But like
Williams,
if Ferrari and McLaren are fighting for that number two spot, I would say that that's very likely going to keep people hooked.
Yeah.
And here's the thing with Sainz winning a race, with Lando winning a race, and you look at that over the course of the season, if it creates just a little bit of intrigue from people, like, you know what, I'm going to tune in. McLaren's got a quick car and that guy Lando Norris and Oscar, they can win a race. Like, they have what it takes. Same thing about the Ferrari boys. You could say like, oh, you know, they've got what it takes. That they show their signs of promise to keep people watching. That could be just enough to keep people hooked and coming back. I mean, listen, they are having no problem signing massive sponsors right now. You've got, you know, McLaren is, there's rumors of signing MasterCard as a potential title sponsor. Again, another American brand with big dollars coming in to spend money on Formula One. Like, there has to be some intrigue. And if they can create just enough intrigue, you're going to keep getting bigger sponsors. Bigger sponsors are going to mean, you know, more activations, more things happening that some people won't like. But that will be good overall for the health of the sport. And eventually, when new regulations come and when somebody else figures out how to make a car that's, you know, worthy of the Red Bull, then you've all of a sudden got a perfect storm. Right now, I think we're just in like that little bit of rut, but
I think
there's hope.
Yeah. Right now, I think the bigger issue that people are having, they look at a team like Williams and they say to themselves, how unserious are you people? Because it's almost like the McLaren, or not the McLaren, the Williams contingent act like Albon's competing for podiums right now in comparison to Logan Sargeant. And when you actually look at how Logan is driving this year, if it weren't for the problems that were not his, that weren't his fault, frankly, he would be, I think, doing better in a lot of ways than Albon. And I don't think it's fair to have the conversation, oh, well, you know, Logan's just not going to make it to next season. He's not going to make it this season either. If you're not also putting Alex Albon in that conversation, because he's not exactly pulling weight right now for Williams either. I think if anything, they're both in a precarious situation. They should be both in a precarious situation. I think that's one of the more toxic sides of Formula One right now, is that you can't look objectively at both drivers in the room and you can't say which driver should be doing better, which driver should be the team leader who isn't exactly acting like it. And I think we know who that is at Williams right now. And that's an unfortunate position to be in, but I just think that people talk about the disparity in the sport and how the spending cap was supposed to kind of neutralize that. It hasn't done that. It hasn't even come close to doing that. And so it's like, where do you go? We've got this crazy level of musical cars happening right now in the F1 free agency. And it doesn't really seem like drivers are keen on moving quickly, which is fine. But at some point, I think Williams has to get serious and they have to say, if we're going to give Albon another season, then we need to give Logan another season as well, and basically have a chat with both of them and say, stop. But at the same time, you also have drivers, which shall not be named, who are doing some pretty dangerous shit on, on track right now that are really kind of messing up opportunities for others. And I think that's something that I hope that's something in the driver market that teams are looking at and saying, was this exactly this person's fault? And right now, it's crazy to say this, we're a quarter of way of the season in, and we can already look at who the problematic drivers on the grid are. And unfortunately, it doesn't really seem like at least 50% of them are going anywhere. So,
yeah, I mean, there's definitely, so it, I will be curious to see if some of the bigger names, you know, end up getting, and I say bigger names, Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious to see if he gets, you know, how do they sort that out with someone like him? And we saw, we know Nico Hulkenberg is going over to Sauber Audi next season. So those Haas seats are wide open. You know, you've got a lot of potential movement with like Gasly and Ocon. At what point do some of these drivers get passed on, or like, do you move on from some of these guys and open up opportunities for younger drivers, or just, I don't know, anybody else?
Yeah.
There's so much storyline. There's so many storylines to follow. And
do you think in that vein, do you think if K Mag is 2 points away from having a race ban, if he does get there, I don't think he'll be back on the grid next season. I mean,
all signs point to no, he doesn't have a deal, and it's not, I don't think he's getting, I don't think he's getting courted by, I haven't heard anything. I can't see where he would go, right? If it's not a Haas.
Hulkenberg made sense to Audi. I mean, it's a German.
Which is what they wanted.
Yeah.
And so they got it. And I think Hulkenberg he's done pretty well.
He's decent, he's unproblematic.
No, and he's experienced, which is what they need. But like, so that means you're already looking at, so Zhou or Bottas are going to be gone. Like, there's a lot of movement that's going to happen by the end of this season.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to see where and who goes, you know. But I could totally see Behrman taking one of those seats.
For sure.
Which would be great. I don't know who takes the other one. Do they just re-sign Magnussen and do Magnussen and Behrman? I think, why not go with two younger guys, who knows? There's a lot of stuff to look forward to when you start looking, and I'm going to leave this note. This is going to be my last, thought of the episode, but when you start looking beyond the main storylines or just the things that, you know, catch all the headlines and, you know, who wins the race and all right, great. If that's all you care about, then, you know, whatever. But when you start looking at other things and you kind of create, put pieces together, or you dive deeper, you know, the business aspect of it, the money aspect, the politics aspect, there is a lot. There's a lot of other things that happen around this sport that we all love. And it's truly fascinating. It really is truly fascinating. And so much of it is intertwined. If you don't think it is, right, it's like, you're mistaken, because somebody can keep themselves on the grid, even if they're not a great driver, if they have something else to offer a team, whether it's sponsorship, you know, through sponsors they bring in, or whether it's through marketability, which I know people don't want to hear that, but if you're marketable, that's big for teams nowadays, right? Like, if you are marketable or you know how to be a marketer, Zach Brown, you can get big dollars coming in. And so all of that stuff is fascinating to me. I know it's fascinating for us on this podcast. Yeah. And I'm glad that we get to kind of chit chat and chop it up about all that.
Maybe we start to like with influencers, rebranding them as salespeople. We need to start rebranding drivers as their part-time salespeople because that's what they're doing. So, you know, their talents are creating deals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah,
it is
a lot we unpacked in this episode for sure.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Let us know your thoughts, or if you have anything to add. Maybe you disagree with some of our statements. Maybe you agree. Maybe you want to hear us talk about something else that we haven't touched on. feel free to reach out to either of us. I'm at Vincenzo Landino on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. She is the VF Castro on Twitter/X or whatever you want to call it. Would love to engage with you on that platform or honestly, wherever you can find us. We're always looking for new angles to come at things. So happy to, and we use, listen, I'll be quite honest with you. I use a lot of your comments as fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not sorry, but a lot of your comments fuel some of my thoughts and ideas and things like that. So,
yep. So keep them coming.
Keep them coming. Mm-hmm. on that note, we will, we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.